Welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman, and with me this week is Jay Barry. Definitely has more hair on his head than Joe Lupton does. That's a big difference this week. No, but hey, Jay, how you doing?
Hey, Bruce, I'm great. How are you doing today?
Okay. So it's a really kind of important week in terms of processing this week's data, of course. But of course, next week we've got the Fed, we've got payrolls, we've got the refunding. So there's a lot going on, obviously important things that play out in the terms of the interest rate outlook. And, you know, what I want to sort of talk about in this call is how our macro views evolving, and they have been, I think, reinforcing the notion that we've been pushing that we're in a high for long environment, but how that plays out in the pricing of the longer end of the curve. And then, you know, thinking about the feedback loops into both broader financial conditions and as well where the economy is heading. And, you know, we've been pretty confident in the high for long, and we've been less confident on how the implications of that play out. So clearly one of the places we need to start, which is how much of this correction in interest rates on the longer end of the curve has taken place. How sensitive do you think the market is to the events coming up in the next week, the three big events we mentioned?
Sure. So I think in aggregate now, it's been about a 90 basis point move from the absolute lows in yields late last year. So pretty large. And I think it's pretty notable that at this point, it's a move in both duration and magnitude that looks a lot like the bigger sell-offs we've seen in the post-GFC period. I mean, you've seen the taper tantrum, the 2016 move, summer of 22, summer of 23. So it's been large, and I think larger than we would have expected. But I think we can say at least a good share of this is pretty fundamental, Bruce, because, you know, I look at ongoing revisions higher to growth expectations that our U.S. team has made. You know, our four quarter ahead growth expectations have moved up by about a percentage point a quarter this year. And because of that, the market has clearly, you know, swung a pendulum on its Fed pricing. At the peak late last year and early this year, markets were pricing the Fed would cut seven times. And now we're pricing a little bit more than a full cut for the year. So a lot of this is being driven by fundamentals.
So this is let's come back to what you just said, because those previous periods that you mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think in all of those cases, the yield adjustments upward unwound to an important degree, not long after we got to the peaks. This time, if the macro environment is fundamentally shifting in terms of a more long-lasting shift in Fed expectations and expectations about growth, are we saying that this is going to play out quite differently than those other adjustments did?
I think that's totally fair, that this could be stickier than we have seen in the past. And I think as a good follow-on to your question there, like the other thing I'd say is the non-fundamental part of what I can observe with this rate move is that there's been a decoupling between where yields have moved and where their fundamental underlying drivers, that being the market's growth and Fed policy and inflation expectations, would tell you they should be priced. And the gap between those two, between where yields are right now and where the fundamental factors that we've identified would have them, is about 40 basis points. And we've only seen that twice over this sort of period. The last time was last summer and fall. And the time prior to that was the fall of 2022, when we were having the UK budget announcement and the deleveraging crisis in the gilt market there. In each of those instances, you know, you kind of had yields decline to sort of match what the fundamental drivers sort of showed. But if we're in a world of higher for longer, and if it's going to take some sort of moderation in inflation consistently to get the markets to price an easier path for the Fed, this time around, it may come from rates remaining sticky to the upside instead of kind of declining back to where their fundamental drivers should suggest that they should be, and maybe implicitly having a higher term premium than we've had in the past. I think that's totally fair.
Well, let's talk about the upcoming week, because, you know, where is the sort of bias of risk in terms of an FOMC that I guess the way I would put what we should expect next week is a Fed that is expressing, and it's pretty much going to be focused on the press conference, a Fed that's expressing a loss of confidence, you know, as Powell has already to some degree previewed, a Fed that is not putting conviction in its March SEP about the amount of easing that it's going to have happen, but basically leave us in something of a holding pattern to the June meeting in a world in which we'll get two employment reports, two CPI reports before we do that. But it does to me kind of send the message, I think, that they're not quite sure anymore. They haven't broke. Last week we talked about it as a narrative cracking. I think you'll get that message. But I think the more important point is the sense that we're not too far from that narrative breaking to some degree. So how sensitive will the market be to that? We have a forecast for next week of a pretty strong gain in payrolls, 250,000 with an unchanged unemployment rate. And you can tell me what you think the refunding is gonna do to that. Do you feel like these events kind of push the story even further in terms of where yields go, or they're relatively neutral in terms of what the bias for next week is?
Yeah, I mean, it's an event sort of laden, or an event risk laden week, I guess I should say. And maybe I'll kind of start first with the policymaking side, because I think you've talked about it and, you know, sort of given a background that's a pretty nice one, which is where I think we're going to be in a holding pattern on both treasury financing and monetary policy. Looking at how the market's pricing the Fed right now, right, even versus the last SEP, which arguably the chair will not necessarily delve into in his commentary, but with the market pricing 30-ish basis points of cuts for this year, only about 125 over the next 5 years, I think an FOMC outcome in which the statement is little changed, in which the chair's comments look a lot like his comments that he delivered last week, and potentially a Q&A, which is dancing around the issue of whether the Fed will have to consider a hike at some point, I think the rates market is sort of well priced for that outcome. And the next real sort of litmus test for the rates markets will probably be the April inflation data out in the beginning of May. And then similarly on the funding side, and Wednesday's a massive day. And I think as a treasury strategist, I like to call it the Super Bowl of the treasury market, because we've got the refunding in the morning and the Fed in the afternoon. It's probably going to be a pretty benign announcement all considered. I mean, the Treasury Department has spent the last 9 months increasing auction sizes at a pretty rapid pace. And we think they're done right now, because they're at a point with where the federal budget deficit is for this year, pretty well funded. The medium-term picture points towards the needs to increase coupon auction sizes further, but that doesn't arise for another year or so. And Treasury's been telling us since November that it was likely to be done by this point. So not a whole lot's changed on the financing side. I mean, the April tax season came in about 10% stronger than last year, but not as strong as 2 years ago, and not enough to shift the narrative on our budget deficit estimate. So I frankly think Wednesday, compared with the last, couple of instances over the last 6 to 9 months where we've had the sort of confluence of these events together, might be resulting in lower volatility than we've seen in these last few instances. And instead, to your point, I think it's the data that are more influential. If we get a 250K payroll read with an unemployment rate that is stable at 3.8%, that's largely in line with what the consensus has got priced. And I don't know if that changes the narrative on where we are right now, which is a market that's embraced a Fed that will start easing later and to sort of a higher terminal rate than we previously expected. To kind of break that narrative, or what did you call it? The sound of one narrative breaking? Was that what it was?
It was cracking.
Week. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We haven't broke yet. But I think the risk is that we could. I think your point is that a 250 payroll with an unchanged unemployment rate by itself doesn't probably push that story very far. But if you come in and this is not necessarily what I forecast, but you get another two high side core inflation readings and you get another strong payroll number on the back of that, you could be seeing the Fed really shift away from the idea that they've got an easing path in the next 6 months, but really the next 18 months, where they are currently sitting with 150 basis points of easing in the March SEP. If we cut that in half, we're already in the market space where I think we're like 110 basis points or so. Last I looked, if we cut that down to 50 to 75, I guess how much of an event is that in your space?
I think directionally the risk is you run rates continuing to run higher, because if you've kind of incrementally moved the SEP by that much, and it's been sort of a set of serial changes this year so far, so long as you see the labor market's holding up and inflation data not sort of moderating further, I think the market's going to sort of interpret that to mean that maybe the Fed has to be on hold for the full year, and fewer cuts for next year as well.
Let me ask you this. You kind of laid the case here that the Treasury funding is a relatively stable animal here. There's two other kind of issues I'd want to raise as you think about how you're valuing the curve right now. One is market doesn't seem to, through all of the noise we've had in the last few months and higher inflation readings, doesn't seem to reprice inflation risk in a significant way, at least where I'm looking at it. What is the risk if we sit here and get another couple of high side readings that something actually happens on that front that might be a factor? Most of the move so far has been real yields, not really inflation compensation. And I guess the second issue is to what degree will there be news next week or anything on the balance sheet side that might actually have an influence, or is that completely anticipated in a way that any announcements we get next week will not have any impact on the market?
Yeah, I think on the former, it's been kind of a cross current for break evens because obviously commodity prices have been rallying this year, which is supportive of higher inflation expectations. But the other big macro factor that tends to drive break evens is the slope of the money market curve. So the fact that, you went from at the start of the year pricing again a Fed that was likely to be cutting 7 times this year to pricing perhaps one cut and a little bit more than that. That's been the offset. So I think they've generally speaking been offsetting factors from here. To get, I think, inflation expectations to sort of move higher, I think
Well,
you
just let
have
me
to
make
have.
sure I understand what you just said. Are you saying that inflation surprises to the upside in terms of the way the market has repriced the Fed, has left the market with a roughly unchanged degree of credibility in terms of the Fed's ability to manage inflation over a longer period of time? Is that what you're
That's
saying, effectively?
exactly, I think, correct. Because as the
Okay.
inflation surprises have come in, we've necessarily priced in a shallower path for easing over the next year and a half to 2 years or so. Absolutely. I think the way inflation expectations move higher, if the Fed's reaction function doesn't shift that much, Bruce, right? If you have a Fed which doesn't shift further in June and still talks about, the next eventual move potentially being an ease, or those dots that you talked about not sort of moving up as aggressively as you suggested that they possibly could, that's one place in which perhaps the market begins to question the Fed's inflation fighting credibility, and in which you could see inflation expectations to move higher in a bit more of an aggressive fashion than they have been. But you're right, it's been really contained so far because I think there's, kind of a wash right there, so to speak.
Okay. It just
And now you asked
surprises
your.
me all through this cycle, and I'm not pushing for a scenario where inflation gets out of control, but just the idea that we have not priced much, if any, real risk into the curve is just surprising to me at how limited that attitude, at least the way I kind of see the market
I
pricing
think
is.
part of it too is you haven't seen much dispersion in inflation forecasting that would make you think inflation risk premium needs to be much higher so far, right? Like if that begins to
I'm not
change,
sure
then
that gives me any comfort that the large majority of the economist community is forecasting inflation to come down, but okay.
but I think we've seen it be reactive to that. When there's larger dispersion in inflation forecast, that's when you see higher inflation risk premium and I think wider, break evens overall, but you haven't seen that so far. And your other question was on the balance sheet, right? And on
Just on the
QT?
balance sheet, yeah, announcement next week. I mean, we are, I think, without a lot of conviction about whether it's next week or the following meeting, we are expecting them to make the announcement on tapering on the balance sheet.
Yeah, I think we've interpreted the chair's prepared remarks in March and discussing the timing for slowing the pace of QT is coming fairly soon as being the May meeting. And the discussion that happened that we can glean from the March minutes would seem to be in line with that. So we expect a formal announcement next week in which the Treasury runoff caps will be cut in half from $60 billion a month to $30 billion a month. And we think it can be implemented basically immediately because since the meeting falls at the beginning of March and the runoff in Treasuries and MBS doesn't occur until mid-month onward, that they could start this right away. I think there is a small debate about whether this is a May or June event, but by and large, with the balance sheet now having been contracting in size for nearly 2 years, the difference between 1 month of implementation on that, I don't think should be a big surprise to the markets, whether it comes now or it comes in June. And I think you and I have had these conversations that the impact of the Fed's balance sheet overall on long-term rates, there is an impact, but it's small. And I'm certainly warm to kind of that presentation that was made at the U.S. Monetary Policy Forum, that there's a bigger impact when you're actively doing QE versus when you're passively doing QT. So I think it's a small
part of that is also just to make this distinction clear. Part of it is when you're actively doing QE, usually the Fed is using it as a monetary policy tool and trying to have it be interpreted as a signal of what it's doing on its broader stance. In some cases, it's at the zero bound. In some cases, it may not be all the way there, but it's definitely a signal. When it's in this environment, and I think in the case we're in right now, Fed wants to keep this as a separate issue relative to whatever it's going to be doing in rate markets, and that should diminish its impact.
Yeah, I don't want to go back and use that. It's like watching paint dry comment that I think Chair Powell had made 5 years ago before the balance sheet kind of became a bigger story for the markets, but that's what it's been so far. And to me, like at its root, if you're going to see QT impacting financial markets anywhere, it starts in the money markets. And there's been no evidence that reserves are becoming, you know, less abundant, much less ample, much less scarce as they did in the fall of 2019. So I think the market understands the Fed here. They are being conservative in their approach to QT because of what happened with respect to money markets 5 years ago. They don't want that to happen again. They're going to start now, and it's kind of in the price.
So let me kind of step back here. Let's just say we're in a high for long world. And let's say, as you said up front, that we're potentially going to see a rise in yields that doesn't get reversed quickly. You know, I think there's an issue on my end and there's an issue on your end to think about. The issue on my end is, you know, whether we're boiling the frog or whether we're in the high for long soft landing scenario, whether or not this is an economy which has the capacity to maintain its footing in a higher yield environment, and we're just underestimating our star, perhaps with better supply conditions, we're underestimating private sector health, and that this can just be sustained. And we're kind of struggling with that. And we have been relatively clear that we don't have a lot of conviction about that versus the possibility that we do start to see high rates do some damage to balance sheet to keep credit tight. It begins to trade dynamics on margin compression and the like that begins to hurt us. But the other side of this, and I've heard it a lot over the last 6 or 9 months, perhaps less over the last month or two, but it's worth bringing up again, is that higher interest rates create stress in the financial system. And I'm just wondering from your point of view, looking at the functioning of the market, looking at other areas that you might think about in terms of stress, is there a reason to be concerned that if we're living in a world of close to 5% 10-year yields for the rest of the year, independent of the economic position of the economy, is there something from the point of view of stress, of funding, banks, credit, that you kind of think about that worries you?
I mean, off the top of my head, there's not anything in market functioning that I can identify, Bruce. And I think, you know, your point here, kind of going back to the original sort of line of thinking, if we're in this higher for longer environment, and whether it's because, you know, our star is higher, because there's still sort of fiscal support, because we can sustain these high interest rates, you know, what it tells me is that all else equal, the yield curve doesn't need to be as inverted as it is sort of right now. And it's pretty fascinating that over the last few weeks, as we've kind of continued to reprice the Fed, it's been pricing terminal higher more than anything else, which has resulted in a little bit of a steepening of the yield curve. So more of a long end story than a front end story. And I think at its root, the Treasury market's functioning fine right now. There are these longer term issues in the risk-free market that the ongoing rapid growth of the Treasury market is outstripping traditional intermediation. And I think we think the Treasury market is going through a normalization in demand away from price insensitive hands like the Fed, U.S. banks and foreign investors, and towards more price sensitive hands like we saw in the 90s. And that's worthwhile because it means more term premium and steeper yield curves. But it's not like what happened last fall when I think it was a concern over the speed of issuance increases. I think you need some sort of exogenous shock right there on the fiscal sustainability side for that to become a concern for the functioning of the risk-free markets overall. Otherwise, this should be a very slowly evolving trade. And in the meantime, it seems like liquidity conditions in the rates market are absolutely fine. So these are all longer-term issues, which I think you need to see some sort of shock there. I think about the other factors that markets were concerned about when rates were this high, spring of last year and last fall. The two that come to mind are obviously the banking community, the regional bank community, and the commercial real estate universe. And, in the commercial banking community, I think the difference versus what was going on then versus now is markets were pricing a Fed that was continuing to hike. And that sort of deposit beta pressure was an issue. And I think there was also an issue related to uninsured deposits, which, if you tell me you think hikes are going to be back on the board, maybe that becomes a source of concern again. But also, the yield curve is not nearly as inverted as it was last spring, which I think overall helps with bank earnings on a relative basis. So maybe that's somewhat of an offset. And then on commercial real estate, it's pretty interesting that, yeah, I mean, I think, the overall high rate environment is probably a sign of a source of weakness for commercial real estate has been well trodden out there. But our CMBS strategist will tell us that CMBS spreads have narrowed pretty aggressively so far in the year to date. So it's almost buffered some of this increase in rates overall. So I think if you see
Overall
spreads
credit has
widening,
done extremely well here, right?
yeah, I mean, spreads everywhere are tight.
Let me flip to another area, which is probably less in your comfort zone, but I know you do pay some attention to, which is the world in which we're entering into now is one where the Fed is, looking like it's going to be patient here and not ease very quickly. But there's other central banks that are easing. And obviously, there's at least one important central bank that's not tightening, the BOJ. So I'm just wondering two things here. One, is there something that we need to be mindful of other than the possibility of some upward pressure on the dollar in terms of how that might feed back to the treasury market? And then secondly, just thinking about the way the yield environment plays out outside the US, is there some place where we should be more cognizant of either stress or some pressure in terms of yields moving higher here that we're not necessarily appreciating?
I was hoping I would ask you that question so I could sort of dance around it. No, but I mean, listen, I
Got you
think mon
first.
yeah, I know you did. I think monetary policy globally matters for U.S. interest rates. I think we can see that, in the zero and negative rate era a decade ago, that low and negative policy rates elsewhere globally were acting as an anchor on U.S. yields. And that's because you could argue that I think there was strong crossover foreign demand into US fixed income at the same time. To an extent, as you've said, we've unwound that everywhere with the exception of Japan. And that's been kind of the last remaining domino to fall. And to the extent that BOJ was more dovish this week, like, it doesn't seem like the risks around a hike are imminent. But, it's funny to me that JGB yields actually moved higher this week more aggressively than any other developed market government bond market. And I think it was on the expectation when it wasn't realized that these RIN ban purchases would be slowed down or something, and they weren't. To me, I'm more watching Japan than anywhere else because you've got 10-year JGB yields back to the peak that we saw 6 months ago and approaching 1%. And I don't think our colleagues in Japan think that this will be dislocative at all. But I think we've seen that around bigger moves in JGB yields, there's been some sensitivity to the US because of this, I don't think, losing that anchor of low rates elsewhere globally. But separate from that, I think it's just the bigger issue that, the Japanese-based demand for US fixed income is just unlikely to be very strong given the cost of hedging that back into yen and the more attractive nature of having home currency fixed income. So I think relative monetary policy developments will matter. If other central banks are easing before the Fed eases, I think that's less impactful for US yields, simply because if you've been talking about this is a US economy where monetary policy looks like it's late cycle, but the economy itself is mid cycle. And if we've got this US exceptionalism that continues, I don't think an ECB or a Bank of Canada that eases potentially before the Fed does is that influential on US yield levels. Conversely, I'd be more worried if BOJ acts. Then that could be something that could be temporarily bearish because we've seen around these instances in which the YCC band was widened last year and BOJ made these policy actions and changes over the last year or so, where the US market's been sensitive to that. And because you're losing that anchor, that one last anchor of low and negative rates elsewhere globally.
I mean, I'd also just note, consistent with what you just said, if you look at currency markets and we step away from the individual crosses and we look at our trade-weighted baskets, the dollar, the euro, the yuan. You look at these in trade weighted terms, they've been trading in a pretty narrow range. Yes, we've seen some upward pressure on the dollar in the last couple of months, but it's 1 to 2%. The real action is the yen in terms of both its recent weakness and also its trend lower over. We're down since the pandemic, I think something like 35% in trade weighted terms. That's an enormous move in a currency. And you're seeing a central bank that's telling you they're just not going to prioritize the currency at this point in time. So that's a potential source of some instability here. And as you're saying, that could possibly feed back into treasury markets. And I mean, it's also a recipe when you think about it, given how low real rates are in Japan, given how low the currency is, given that our views are that we have a world of a relatively broadening base for global growth, which should help industry and Japanese exports by itself. It's hard to not expect Japanese growth here to surprise materially to the upside here. And one thing, I've been trying to point out to people in the last few weeks is that Japan is a low growth economy, just like Europe is. But Japan is a much more dynamic economy. So when things are good in Japan, they do get to growing 2-3% without much difficulty. So I think there's some genuine upside here. So I think Japan is interesting there, both because I think it's one of the more levered stories from a macro point of view, but it's also potentially one where you've got more pressure and volatility in terms of how the interaction of the economy, the currency, and the central bank story plays itself out here. I guess we shouldn't end on a Japan note entirely. We should come back to the treasury market. Maybe you can end just by giving us sort of what you think is a reasonable range for the next 3 to 6 months in terms of where you think treasury yields will play out. Anything else you want to end on, please feel free.
So I think on that range, I think we've been talking the last couple of weeks, Bruce, and kind of opened up with this that given the duration and breadth of this move, we're probably getting close to the peak of the move in long-term rates here, unless the market's willing to price the Fed to tighten. And from what you're saying, even though it's likely that even by the June meeting that projections and forecasts are going to move in a less dovish, more hawkish fashion, that it may take months of inflation to consider a hike. And if that's the case, I think we're probably considering the upside to 10-year yields from here somewhere in the vicinity of 480 to 485, whereas probably the downside is probably like 440 to 450 in my mind. So implicitly in that, I'm still saying that the skew is to lower yields within this range. And some of that is coming off of the base of, again, how cheap we are trading relative to model here, and how much of that to me reflects the fact that there's been a reordering of expectations and positioning in the fixed income markets that's occurred in the year to date. So I think that's been my broad range. But even though we're kind of sitting distributionally with a bias towards lower yields within that, I'm just not willing at this point to take a stab at positioning for lower yields. And yes, to be fair, our forecasts for the end of the year are considerably lower. But we're in a world in which, again, the curve's inverted and carry's negative. And I think you need to create an incentive for end users to want to extend out the yield curve and out of their native habitat, which is right now the money market space and the short end of the treasury curve. So absent that, it's hard for me to find a real carrot to want to add duration here over the short term, particularly when we've got this event risk coming up. So I think that's the only sort of final thing that I would sort of finish up with is that, distributionally, we think the risks are somewhat skewed towards lower rates within the range the next few months, but not near term, and not willing to position forward at the moment. And maybe the only thing, maybe we should finish up and be optimistic here, Bruce, because it's now like the end of April. And I mean, we saw the Mets lead off 0-5. Then they won six games in a row, and they're still above 500. So, I mean, you got to believe. Is that where we should finish this?
No, I'm focused on the Knicks now. Maybe let's hope for them. The Mets, who knows, but they're not going to end anywhere that interesting this year, I don't think.
I'm a baseball fan and a hockey fan. I don't have a playoff baseball, a
You've got the
playoff basketball
Rangers
hang.
to root for here, right?
I'm a long-suffering Islanders fan, Bruce. Like, I have
Oh.
nothing to hang my hat on there.
All right. We won't bring in the Jets or even the Giants. We'll leave that there. So anyway, thanks, Jay.
Thanks for having me today.
And sure. And to everyone, hope we can continue this conversation, which is going to be pretty interesting next Friday on the Weekender. Take care.